Yeah, it's a difficult one. As well, lots of things come at you at once, like the idea that human rights develop within the system that we have. Certain freedoms that we have work well within, capitalism or whatever. That so did they come with capitalism? You
Yes.
know, or you know, or the, so you know, you could say, when back in the Cold War. Or times where you're fighting against fascist regimes or whatever, the big thing is that country won't work because it's not accepting our liberal democratic capitalism. And hand in hand, you must have these certain freedoms for this system to work.
Yes.
So
Well, yeah.
what the question I'm trying to get to is, is in a kind of Marxist way of looking at it, I guess, or a Marxian way of looking at it, the ideas that we have, do they come with the economic system that we have?
You asking me?
I'm
I
asking you,
don't,
yeah.
yeah, I don't know. I think you're probably right. I think there's always that kind of ideological, background to these. I mean, it's probably. I mean, it's why. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, when during the Cold War, as you mentioned it, you had that kind of polarization between kind of the if you like the kind of the American kind of individualist system and the kind of Soviet communal system, both of them representing extremes, both of them representing an understanding of human being in one form or another. And it's interesting when you see when you see the kind of the abuse that's used. I mean, you almost never heard the word communism from the States without somebody calling it godless. It's godless communism, godless communists, and it's almost as if, the only way you can justify that they are the bad guys is by somehow kind of, tagging it onto an absolute metaphysic. There has to be a kind of a meta narrative, which somehow kind of makes it, we are on the side of the angels and they're the demons. It's like, it's like, it happened all the time. It was, Hitler when he was doing his thing. Sought a metaphysic, and he wanted to buy the church into kind of the Nazi agenda, and to its shame, some of the churches kind of fell in line, but most of them said, no, we're not having this. Just, we're not going to justify you. You're not going to be writing, having us praying over bombs and so on. So he found something else. He found a more kind of Germanic paganism. Which he used kind of all the kind of Wagnerian kind of music and the kind of Odinic stuff and kind of all that Norse mythology and the Germans as the kind of Aryan men of the forests and all that. And he created that story to give it a kind of a larger narrative, a larger justifying context that we are the good people, we are the right people. And like, the Semitic peoples and, these are the kind of the peoples of the desert, the dry, arid, used up, finished, you can't grow anything in that culture kind of. Anybody starts talking metaphysics in politics and be very suspicious because they're just trying to justify the moral high ground or try to occupy moral high ground.
What I like is when you say something, like you said, godless communists, and you can actually say that the same word, but it's you have different perspectives of that. Like, they're just godless communists. And communists, or Marxist communists wouldn't agree would agree
Yeah, absolutely.
because they are godless com
Yeah.
and there's a really good it was a good cartoon I saw about to do with like gender politics and things. It was a picture of someone like in a like an Arab woman in full kind of hijab and I've forgotten the word now. Full covering.
Burka, yeah.
Looking at a woman who's
Wearing a
like wearing,
bikini.
yeah,
I've
and they're
seen it,
both saying, "Oh, that's a woman's oppressed."
Yeah, it's an awful that men can oppress. Yeah, and they're both thinking the same thing, making a dress like this. Yeah, how oppressive is that? Yeah. And
So
I
it's
do, I
different
use this
perspectives,
metaphor.
yeah.
Absolutely. I was watching. I've been working my way through, as you know, old old horror movies. Lots of fun stuff to be had there, and I'm working my way through a lot of the old Hammer horror movies of the 60s particularly. I watched one recently. I've seen it a number of times before, but I'm a big fan of Christopher Lee. It's a film based on a Dennis Wheatley novel. Dennis Wheatley was the guy, you know, back in the 70s. He was a big, high-selling author. Wrote a lot of stuff about the occult. So it's very popular at the time. And he wrote a book called The Devil Rides Out. And there's a conversation there. So Christopher Lee, who's the Duc de Richelieu, who's this kind of knowledgeable, guy who's scandalized by one of his young friends getting involved in the dark arts. He's talking to one of his other friends, trying to explain to him, and trying to make him believe. And he's saying to his friend, look, do you believe in evil? And the guy says, well, as a concept, I believe in it. Do you believe in the power of evil? Well, yeah. Well, as a thing that we do. He said, yeah, but not as an actual entity, not as an actual thing. And then Christopher Lee says, well, that's where you're wrong. Evil is an actual thing out there. It's the devil, it's the demons, and it's something that can be fought. And there are some people who ally themselves with that. And as the whole thing tops out, they go and they try and rescue their friend and the inevitable girl, and some goat-headed kind of monstrosity is kind of sat there in some pagan kind of, some awful sort of satanic rite where lots of blood's being thrown around. It's very hammery and it's very kind of its time. And you think, that is, in a sense, that is just, that provides you with a much cleaner, more straightforward ethical basis, because you can say, okay, there are the bad guys, the devils, the demons, they're trying to encourage us to do all sorts of unpleasant things, hate and fight each other and lie and cheat and, be lustful and a whole bunch of stuff. We can direct ourselves at these guys. These are the bad guys. When it starts getting to, the concept of evil, as an idea, then it starts to kind of lose its potency. Then it's kind of, well, what exactly is an evil? Is an evil act? I mean, yeah.
Well, like the great kind of Nietzsche rug pull on that, isn't it? Is because the genealogy of morality? And he talks about the development of the concept of evil.
Yes.
And so before you had good people and bad people, and bad meant not successful in whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
meant successful in whatever they're doing. And with the slave revolt, bad whatever was against their concept of the good became evil.
Yes.
This thing that must not be, this concept that is totally should be rejected, rather than a look at the contrast between successful and not successful. It's what we think is good and the worst thing that we must get rid of, which is evil. And that's whenever I think of things like Satan, evil, I immediately go to that, and it just ruins loads of horror Hammer movies.
But it is interesting, isn't it? How I mean, even even in these kind of more secular times, how popular that model is. And we already, we've just been saying, the old Hammer horror movies. So evil was something you could genuinely kind of put, you could put your finger on, because it's, it's Count Dracula, for example, and he's genuinely evil. He's against all the things that are good, all against religion and purity and so on. And you knew how to deal with him. You could use the symbols of good, the symbols of religion, and he would reject those, and it would drive him back. And then you kind of, you've got, as we said, you've got things like Buffy, for example, and it's again, you've got the demons and fighting the demons, punching the demons on the nose, punching evil on the nose. Just makes it so much kind of clear cut. You've got TV shows like The Supernatural and so on, and endless films. And you see, it is, it's almost as if it's kind of what we want, that the world is just such a complex ethical place, and we often feel so confused and powerless to address things in the world in an ethically meaningful way.
Yeah.
Just heart back, oh, what I'd really like is I'd like evil to be stood here in this room with me, and I could really lay into it with a baseball bat so I knew what was going on here, and I could like hold a crucifix up, like throw holy water in it, and we could fight the evil. But the evil is just it dissipates, you know, it's not something we can get our hands. I'll finish on this because I know you've got something to say here, but I mean, one of the examples of this that always struck me even as a kid was back in the 1940s. When the comic character Captain America first came on the scene. He was kind of created in the 1940s, you know, very much as a kind of an anti-war, as a kind of like an anti-Nazi character, and then was rehabilitated, and then was kind of reused again in the 60s, kind of brought back. But the first edition of, like, you know, Captain America magazine in the 40s had, even before America entered the war formally, had Captain America punching Hitler on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
He was there kind of in Hitler's command bunker, and he literally punched him on the nose. And the whole narrative there was, you know, this is what we want to do. Here's this guy who's causing all kinds of horror across Europe. And what we really want to do is, you know, rather than have to think about the sacrifices that need to be made and, you know, the kind of logistics of the, we just want to get him and just beat him up and just get rid of him. And sadly, a lot of the ethical things that we are confronted with, there is no target.
Mm-mm-mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's exhausting constantly having to have critical thought.
Mm.
You know, I hear my kids, they repeat something they hear on YouTube, and I'm like, I'm going to have to start to explain why they shouldn't just take that on face value.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. It'd be nice to have. So I like the Tarantino movies. It's not a great one, but, Inglourious Basterds.
I love that. That was great. it's
good, but it's simple, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Just shoot, it does blur the edges of morality in terms of, well, how far are you going to go? But then, you know, just killing, I don't want to plot spoil here, but, you know, killing the bad guys.
Yeah.
Let's see them dead, you know, this is great.
Absolutely. Well, I think a lot of movies, particularly kind of more fantasy-based movies, try and establish... an irredeemable, ethically kind of repugnant enemy. So the Nazis are always the go-to. It doesn't matter. Although, sadly, we are now living in a world where we're actually beginning to see that even that is now being eroded. And, you know, Nazis are kind of now being kind of, you know, valorized by certain portions. But it had always been that, you know, if you want an uncomplicated bad guy, bring in the Nazis, and then we can beat them up, because it was, you know, recognised that there is nothing redeemable about these people. So there's no kind of complicated ethical decision that needs to be made here. These people deserve everything they get. So, you know, Indiana Jones has them in there, and a lot of computer games have Nazis, or have Nazis kind of, you know, being brought back from like cryogenic sleep or whatever. But, you know, a filmmaker and a computer game maker will feel they were fairly safe by bringing those guys in. Nobody's going to turn around and say, you know, oh no, you're wailing on these guys, and they're not all bad. To be Nazi just means you're bad. Or you bring in aliens, because then you can give them all kinds of attributes that make them, you know, unpopular. Or you bring in demons. So you set up those very easy ethical targets. And I think that's why that's so popular, because we are just, as you say, we are exhausted a lot of the time trying to make ethical judgments, and trying to not only making ethical judgments, but justifying to ourselves the basis for ethical judgments. I believe this is what I think is right, but I don't really know. Deep down, I don't really know why I think this is right. I just believe it to be right, and this is how, essentially, you know, this is how I want to live my life. I mean, maybe that's what it comes down to. This is how I want to live my life.
Yeah, and we were in a world where identity is so important, and I think I've mentioned this before as well. So changing your mind on something is actually dismantling your identity.
Mm.
And what a really difficult thing to do, to ask of somebody.
It's a hard one. I mean, I kind of find myself just at the end of all these kind of discussions, I find myself just kind of, you know, just drifting towards that kind of more phenomenological sort of arena, where I just say, well, kind of, you know, what kind of, I mean, and it's a bit trigger, but kind of what works for me, you know, what kind of human being do I want to be? And maybe this is Kantian, and maybe it's kind of Kant, you know, Kant saying, what kind of human being are you? And you shouldn't treat other human beings in any other way. It's vaguely Aristotelian as well. And it's kind of, what kind of human being am I? Do I think? And you know, how do I want to be treated? What kind of world do I want to live in? And if this is the kind of human being I am, these are the kind of human beings I would like to be surrounded with. Then phenomenologically, kind of in that kind of circle, this is how I have decided. And again, it might be utilitarian. This is how I've decided to operate, to create that kind of environment. I will act to people towards people in a particular way. I won't do this. I will do that. I will generate, because that's the kind of environment I want to create for myself. That's the world I want to live in. Maybe that's the most you can do. And then you're stuck in that situation of saying, well, okay, you know, do I try and convince other people to become part of that world? You know, do I want other people, or do I just find people, or am I just attracted to people who see themselves and the world in the same way? But there's nothing necessarily objective about it. It's just, this is the kind of world I want to live in. You know, I don't want to live in the world with the zombies, just, you know, you're kind of mooching around. You know, I want to live in a world where, you know, these sorts of things happen. So let's just work at that. What do you reckon? I don't know.
I'm with it. I'm kind of eternally an optimist.
Yeah, you are.
Keep getting battered, but I just keep going forward. I want to, you know, I like. That's why I've always liked Star Trek.
Yeah,
it's like let's stop, you know, messing around. Yeah, destroying our planet and, you know, trying to accumulate wealth. This is nonsense. Just stop this.
Yeah.
Make peace, build spaceships and, you know, explore the universe. It's just, you know, what are we waiting for?
Yeah. I'm with you on that. But, I mean, even for people who have a question mark over the whole space exploration thing, and you're wrong, of course, even that, you just think, yeah, well, maybe there's a kind of enlightened self-interest going on here. So, well, you know, surely it makes more sense, even if you're looking for the greatest happiness, even if you're looking for, you know, more comfort and you know, more, it makes more sense surely to work together as a species to create a utopian world where, you know, you can have whatever you want and be as comfortable as you want, and so on. I mean, surely that makes more sense. I mean, and unless you genuinely, what you genuinely want as a human being is competition. I mean, you know, there's that kind of Hegelian thing, because, you know, Hegel talks about that kind of the dialectic, that need for conflict to create the next stage in whatever evolution that humanity is going through. And maybe that's necessary. But even he said it was an end point. Even he thought there would be an end point where it all kind of, you know,
there needs to be a paradise, you know, a fixed outside goal. You know, like, you know, like exploring space or something like that. Or,
yeah.
You know, it's obviously really completely fanciful. But if we did find life on another planet, then instantly we're all one race. We're different to that planet. We're all one race here.
Yeah.
That would be a one step towards, you know.
Yeah, a kind of global worldview. Yeah, and we don't tend to see ourselves globally. I remember in, again, we might have mentioned this, that Alan Moore wrote, but now disclosed, now has abandoned, but he wrote Watchmen, graphic novel series of comics. And there's a film version of it as well, which departs slightly at the end from the comic. But, and I remember in the comic, there's a guy who's, you know, one of the good guys, one of the watchmen, one of the kind of these heroes. It's more complicated than that. And he's very smart and so on. And it turns out, this is not a plot spoiler because this book's been around for blooming ages. So, you know. But it turns out that, you know, he's been kind of killing off people to hide a particular secret that some big agenda he's planned for kind of world unity. And what he's done is he's come up with this plan where he creates the a mock image of an alien invasion. So basically, this huge kind of like alien creature kind of crashes to Earth. It kind of generates this huge pulse. It kills a whole bunch of people. Kind of, you know, causes like, you know, some heads to explode or whatever, and then is destroyed through some. And then the kind of the I think the message is, oh, you know, there are likely to be more coming.
Mm.
And so we now, as a species, have to rally together. And he engineers this as a way of getting people to think as humanity, to prepare to work together on a global project. And then anybody who discovers that this is just a fiction that's been created, he feels he's justified in getting rid of and killing, because, you know, they feel there's a guy called Rorschach, one of the a kind of a Batman-y sort of figure. And he says, no, people need to know, because, you know, very deontological, very candid. Can't lie. You've got to tell people the truth. People need to know the truth. He says, no, you know, there's a greater agenda here, you know, and I'm not going to let you spoil it. So, you know, he dies. and that idea of again, as we were saying about, you know, H.G. Wells and these people, so you can't have a kind of an idea of kind of human rights when every different country and every different continent, every different kind of group of people has a different agenda, and they're all kind of focused on a different agenda, then inevitably it just becomes competitive and antagonistic. So maybe we need a single agenda, something to bring us all together.
So you're thinking of something, you know, something that the world could experience, that's
I know you're going with this.
Will thing, you know, affect every country?
Everybody, yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
like a pandemic type.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. And of course, we've seen what's happened there. I guess it, again, but I think it can't be a pandemic, because again, the ordinary person on the street can't punch that on the nose.
That's true.
Because, you know, so, you know, well, they could, I suppose, you know, wearing a mask doesn't make people kind of feel heroic enough, I think. But yeah, yeah. Maybe we still find ways of being petty and tribalistic by saying, yeah, well, as long as, you know, the aliens are running after these guys and not us, then that's fine.
We've got another 24 hours, we'll be right.
Yeah, that's right. Or, yeah, we'll you know, as long as we, you know, we'll build our own, like, you know, we'll build our own compound, and we'll stockpile all our toilet paper and our stuff here, and the rest of you can suffer, and the aliens can have you. It's fine, you know. So as long as you don't have to run faster than the bear, as long as you're running faster than your colleague is also trying to outrun the bear. Yeah.
We've gone very dark and negative.
It has gone dark. Yeah.
We've got to come up with we've run out of time here, so we've got to who's going to emerge from this cage.
I don't know. I mean, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, really.
I'm thinking Kant. I'm thinking Kant here. Yeah. I feel
really.
I feel a little bit more convinced about, you know, the capacity for the individual to come up with a kind of a universal law based on conscience rather than a kind of practical thing.
I think you're right. Because, I mean, bear in mind that people like Bentham and so on tended to hang out with the great and the good, with kind of rational, decent, civilized human beings. The same as kind of Plato. It was kind of, you know, so they kind of have a view that, well, you know, ordinary, decent people will kind of come up with the right thing. You know, will come up with an hedonic calculus, will come up with a utilitarian model, which will genuinely be there to kind of help all people. But of course, as we know, human beings are quite petty, and they won't necessarily come up with something that was going to be beneficial to all. And
they're more complicated.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, I think most people have a kind of an intuitive belief about the nature of human beings and the nature of human existence. And it might be something that's generated through experience or through their own interactions with other human beings and an analysis of the way they feel when they're interacting with human beings. And out of that kind of phenomenology of human engagement, they come up with a belief about how we should behave with each other. And my guess is, and don't hold me to this, but my guess is that, you know, that a lot of people, again, operating within a similar sort of context, will probably come up with the same view. They'll generally, you know, if you know, if you're thinking about the same issues and you're thinking about the nature of the human condition and the human world and so on and so forth, the chances are you will get a significant number of people coming up with a similar kind of worldview.
That's a hope, isn't it?
And that's a hope, and you know, those are the, and that's, you know, it won't be everybody, but it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like we were saying right at the very beginning, a little bit like science. You know, if you've got that underlying belief that the universe makes sense, and it is a belief, then something will grow out of that. And the more you develop that, and the more it seems to work, then the more you can put your trust in that, and the more you can say, yeah, the initial belief that the universe makes sense, I can't prove that, it's not empirically provable, as Hume tells us, but it seems to work.
It seems to work. It's looking up the looking up the stars and making patterns out of them.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, and that's and that's what Kant says. I think that's you know, that's the categorical imperative. That's the critique of practical reason. Practical reason is we adopt this point of view, we adopt this belief, and it kind of seems to work ethically. So let's just get, and the more we do it, the more we trust it. I don't know. I just want to be nice to people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be excellent to each other.
Be excellent to each other.